AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Released to the public is the police video of Tyre Nichols' encounter with Memphis officers on January 7th. CBS's Steve Futterman.
I didn't do anything!
The released video shows graphic scenes. Tyre Nichols at times pleading with police, saying he's cooperating. The police respond at times with pepper spray, tasers. One of the most disturbing scenes isn't from body cam video, but on another tape from a stationary camera on a pole. Police can be seen holding Nichols up. He appears to be helpless. Police then strike him a number of times to the face. Nichols then falls to the ground. And at another point, we can hear Nichols calling for his mother. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Nichols died 3 days later. President Biden says he was outraged and deeply pained to see the horrific video. Mr. Biden spoke to Nichols' mother earlier today. She called for any protests to be peaceful.
I'm obviously very concerned about it, but I think she has made a very strong plea. She's obviously in enormous pain.
Reporter Chris Fox is in Memphis.
Protesters have shut down I-55. They're heading towards downtown Memphis, walking very slowly, occasionally stopping. They're holding signs saying, "I am Tyre," and "Justice for Tyre." The goal in this case is to stop commerce. They're chanting, "They took our lives, so we're taking their money." Chris Fox for CBS News, Memphis.
There's also a demonstration in New York City where protesters surrounded police cars. Video has also been released of the police response to the San Francisco home of former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi the night her husband was attacked. When the front door opens, officers ask Pelosi and the alleged attacker, with a hammer in hand, what's going on. That's when the hammer is lifted and Paul Pelosi is struck and falls to the ground.
What's going on right now?
I'm not getting an answer. I'm
David DePappas pleaded not guilty in separate state and federal cases. In the double murder trial for former South Carolina lawyer Alex Murdoch, the state presents video, police video from the night Murdoch reported the deaths of his wife and son.
I pulled up and I could see him, and, you know, I knew something was bad. I ran out. I knew it was really bad. My boy.
Prosecutors say Murdoch's comments to police about his whereabouts around the time of the fatal shootings may not have been accurate. Staffing shortages are a growing problem for pharmacies. CBS's Jim Crisula.
CVS and Walmart plan to cut pharmacy hours in the midst of a shortage of pharmacists, according to a published report. That has been a problem throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Walgreens had earlier said it was operating thousands of stores on reduced hours because of staffing shortages.
And Wall Street ticks higher. The Dow closed up 29 points. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
From the Civic Media Newsroom, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Dozens of vehicles involved in a pileup shutting down part of Interstate 3990 between Janesville and Beloit this afternoon. Crews and officials expect a long and slow cleanup. The State Patrol says it happened around 12:30 this afternoon during whiteout conditions. A steady shower of wet snow was falling all morning. We don't know yet how many people might have been hurt or how badly. The State Justice Department is suing the Wisconsin Department of Military Affairs, alleging the agency offered a woman less pay than men with similar qualifications. In 2016, Military Affairs offered an internal candidate a job as Wisconsin's head of the Bureau of Response and Recovery. The job listed at $79,000, but they offered her less. A man was eventually hired for the job, and he was paid more than she was offered. In sports, the Bucks are at Indiana tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with The Bears Still Suck as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUK.
We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as you know, we've been talking about the unfair labor strike going on in Pittsburgh with the News Guild of Pittsburgh. You've got the workers at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette who have been on strike now over 100 days. They were in Toledo, I guess yesterday, for the annual meeting of the parent company, this BCI Communications, this Block Communications, the people who own the Post-Gazette and the Toledo Blade and other publications, but got some really, really good news yesterday. And here to share some of that and what that news is and maybe how this is going to be helpful, I've asked John Santa to come talk with us. John is a member of the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh, also one of the striking Pittsburgh Post-Gazette workers. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here on a Friday night.
So we're over 100 days you guys have stuck together through this. Let's start with good on you guys. Strength on the line is important in these moments, and you guys have shown some incredible fortitude and solidarity. So good on you guys.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. We've received a ton of community support. Pittsburgh is definitely a union town, and we want the Block family in every way to know that this is never going to be a company town. We are standing strong for sure.
Now, you've been at this over 100 days. This has got to be really difficult on families, on your coworkers. How are you guys getting through this?
You know, it's like you said, it's a lot of solidarity. It's a lot of getting support from the community. It's supporting each other. We have our strike publication, the Pittsburgh Union Progress. That a lot of us, I think the general consensus of people that are working for it, I mean, we have people that are selling ads, we have people that are writing, people creating graphics. I mean, it's the work that we do. We, you know, at the end of the day, we're proud to be a part of this union and proud to be a part of this strike, but we are journalists. We're not used to being part of the story. So any sense of normalcy that we can have, that's been great. And that's the pop. Like, we are putting out the same quality journalism that we did in the Post-Gazette, and I think that means a lot to everyone that takes part in it, especially when we can't be doing our jobs.
No, I've read it. I make sure I try and take a look at it every couple of days, because it's important to support good union publications and people who are doing the important work of journalism. But I want to get to the big story yesterday, because an administrative law judge yesterday said, hey Block Communications, hey Block, you're wrong. This is a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I can tell you, like you mentioned, there was a contingent of us that were in Toledo yesterday, and we got the news driving back from Toledo on the Ohio Turnpike in a snowstorm. And you would have thought, something was going on in that car. It was shaking. We were screaming. We were yelling. We were happy. We've been waiting for this decision to come down. We were told that it could have come as late as February or March, and for it to come back on that car ride after the quite frankly, rough day we spent on the picket line outside in the cold in Toledo was, it was just unbelievable timing. It's something out of a movie.
Now, according to the report that I've seen, this administrative law judge ruled that overwhelmingly the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette management and representatives bargained in bad faith with the guild since 2017, and in doing so violated the National Labor Relations Act, and said, look, you know, you can't make these unilateral changes that they made. You need to go back to the original contract, as I understand this, and then get back to work and get back to bargaining. What repercussions now for breaking the law comes with this? Because here's, again, another one of these companies breaking the law willy-nilly without fear of reprisal or consequences. What happens to them when they break the law like this?
You know, kind of the strange thing about it is what's going to happen to them is they're going to be forced to come back to the bargaining table and bring the quality journalism that Pittsburgh has enjoyed from Post-Gazette and journalists and employees back to the public. It's really, it's karma. You know, they've been staging this ideological fight that they just want to break this union, and they're not going to. We are strong. We are together. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to have to pay, you know, healthcare premiums and money that are owed to journalists for many years now. They're going to have to pay those journalists for their healthcare. They're going to have to give us a raise for the first time in 17 years. They are going to have to finally be forced to treat us fairly and, you know, give back to us for the quality work that we've been doing to them. I mean, there are journalists on the line with us that won Pulitzers for this company, and this is the way they're treated.
Wow.
It's just unfair.
Now, you said something there a second ago that I find important. They're not going to be able to break this union, because I believe a lot of these strikes come down to these companies. Not that they can't afford to pay the health care, not that they can't afford to give wage increases, not that they can't make, you know, conditions better, not that they can't, it's that they won't. It's a power trip, and how dare the union tell me that I have to do anything. And this seems to be one of those cases. How accurate is it, do you think, that this wasn't about money, this wasn't about newspaper survivability, this was just a pure power grab?
$66,000 is all it would take to provide health care for the Teamsters that originally walked out, and for all of us. That could end this. $66,000. During this strike, they purchased the Pittsburgh City paper. I mean, that's it. They bought another paper when they could have settled this for $66,000. It's not about money. It's about their ideological belief that unions shouldn't exist. It's about their ideological belief that they don't have to be told by anybody what they're going to do. They think they're above that. And we're a strong union. We're going to be sticking together. And they're going to have to reckon with that. That's the bottom line. We are very much in this fight. We're holding a rally in downtown Pittsburgh tomorrow to commemorate the 100th day of the strike. And we're going to show them. We're going to show them that, you know, like I said, Pittsburgh is a union town. And they're going to have to understand that.
Well, the hope is that we are a union country and we want to support workers who are fighting for better wages, hours, conditions. Absolutely. Respect for work in this country should be job one. And I hope folks will support you guys. And I know you guys are doing a fundraising drive with the Action Network, actionnetwork.org. We'll get links out on social media how folks can help support the strike. Because ultimately, it comes down to, you know, you guys are going without your regular paycheck, without your benefits. You've got families and households to run. And these companies know this. The blocks of the world know that they can try and starve working people out. So if we support you guys and we support folks who are trying to make things better, maybe this stuff stops at some point.
Yeah, let's hope so. And I appreciate any kind of support you can give us. I know everyone out on the line definitely does. You know, it's... I'm not going to act like it's not really difficult to be on strike. It is. It's psychologically, physically, emotionally, all of that. It's exhausting. And any support that we can receive is greatly appreciated. Like I said, we've already received so much great support, not just from Pittsburgh, but from newsrooms all over the country, from organizations, different unions all over the country. It's been inspiring. It really, you know, I grew up in a union family, and, you know, I always heard the, you know, why this was important. And, you know, as much as I just said that it's so difficult, and that's all true, it's also somewhat inspiring to like actually see it in action, how everyone is joining together. Like you said, Pittsburgh is a union town, but also this country is a union country, and we need to respect that and protect it.
Yeah, and what I like that you guys did is started this Pittsburgh Union Progress publication to tell some of the stories, because I don't think we talk enough about what it means to be a union member, what it means to have to go on strike. You guys didn't want this, did you?
No. We have our strike headquarters in the United Steelworkers building in downtown Pittsburgh, and I was actually speaking to the man who runs the front desk today, and you know he said. He told me, you know, congratulations on the NLRB decision. That's great. He said, I know it's difficult for you guys because you journalists don't like to be in the spotlight. And that's true. You know, our whole career is about not making yourself part of the story. We're telling the story. And it's a difficult move for us to be a part of it now. But we all see how necessary it is. I mean, it's important as it's maybe job one of being a journalist to hold power to account. And if we can't do that within our own company, how can we be expected to, you know, ask the mayor of Pittsburgh difficult questions, the governor of Pennsylvania difficult questions? I don't know how anyone in their right minds could expect us to do that. So, you know, I think it's a moral and ethical obligation for us as journalists to be a part of this strike.
See, you hit on something here that I think is really important. And I hope people will take from it what you're talking about. When I talk about people having the ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions, when I talk about people joining unions, I talk about empowerment. There's a sense of empowerment that I can say, no, I'm not going to work for poverty wages. No, I'm not going to work in bad conditions. No, I'm not going to let bad things happen. There's a sense of empowerment in the workplace where in a society that still believes, here in Pennsylvania anyway, our workers' compensation law still looks at the employer-employee relationship as master and servant. In an environment where the boss, the CEO, the owner is the master and looks down as everyone is just the servants, that kind of empowerment is pretty impressive. But those people also take that into the community and hold public officials accountable, hold communities accountable, which is why I think we need more folks like you, more folks who are going to be willing to stand up, speak out, and demand better. It's just that simple.
Thank you. And honestly, it's about all of us doing that. And you know, me personally, I have an uncle who's a steel worker. My dad was a union laborer. I have a grandfather who was a union railroad worker, another one that was a union laborer. There's no way I wouldn't have been able to join this strike. They would have kicked my butt if I didn't. So, you know, I was happy to do it, and I'm happy to be a part of their legacy, you know, in my family of strong union men. Also, my wife's a union teacher, so.
I do want to go back to your time in Toledo, and I love my folks in Toledo, our listeners. They're in the Toledo area. You're at this annual meeting, and you're talking to these shareholders. You're talking to these people coming in. Did you get any sense that they get what's going on? That it's harming them, the decision to force you guys pretty much to go on strike by basically offering you nothing, hurts them? Do you think they got that, or was this just about pennies and dollars to them?
You know, it's hard to say. A lot of them dodged us. We're not exactly sure what happened. You know, we were strategically picketing in places that we thought we would catch them coming into the building. It's a large skyscraper in downtown Toledo where the meeting was held. We know there were some participants in the meeting who came in on Zoom. We only caught one member of the Block family coming into the building. We were able to speak with her briefly. She didn't really say much. The most interesting thing about the day is it was like right when we were about ready to finish the picketing, an Amazon delivery man came and he was going to come into the building, and you know he asked us what we were doing, and one of the people that was with us told him, and he said, "Oh, give me some pamphlets. I'll take them up to the meeting. I'm actually going up to the meeting." So he went up to the meeting. He took like I don't know. A huge handful of these pamphlets. And he said that he took them up to the meeting and put them on the table where they were all at. And he said he was told that I'm drawing a blank on exactly what he said, but essentially he said that, you know, he was told that we're crazy. We're out of touch. You know, we're just wrong. We shouldn't be down there. That was the general gist of it. So wow. That was really the largest impact that we were able to have throughout the day. Because like I said, people either joined by Zoom or found some way to sneak in and get past us.
And this was an Amazon driver who did this.
This was an Amazon driver who took our pamphlets up there and said he wanted to let them know that we were down there. It was amazing.
Good for him. Good for him. See, this is why I think the Teamsters are reaching out to the Amazon drivers to get them organized so that they can get better wages, hours, conditions. This makes me happy to hear that the message is getting through, because this is how we build or rebuild the most prosperous working class in history, by helping each other, by standing together, by taking the message in different veins. This is good news.
Yeah, it was inspiring. It got a good laugh out of all of us, because this guy was just very energetic. He was funny. So it was great to see.
Well, John, I wish you guys the best. Hopefully you're going to be back to work soon and getting what you earn. And hopefully this gets settled and you last one day longer, one day stronger. John Santa, I appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you. And thank you for having me on so we can spread our message. I really much appreciate it. I know everyone here does.
Good stuff. I hope you'll come back and when this is over and celebrate victory with me.
Anytime. I would love that.
Good stuff. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. You want to check out the website, actionnetwork.org. Maybe help kick in a couple of bucks to help these guys who are and folks who are on strike. We'll get links out on social media. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, I love this. Mike Pence, he admits that mistakes were made with classified documents in the kind of way that, you know, it's one of those things that you don't actually admit that you were part of it. Their mistakes were made. Now, this is where, again, this is where Biden, do you think Biden took the classified documents, stuffed them in the box when they packed them up, and then carried them into his garage? This is where the disconnect happens. Trump has already admitted that he picked up the folders. Did you not hear that? Oh, I saw them. They were pretty folders. They were nice keepsakes. They had words on them. They had words like classified and top secret and other words. He's admitted that, yeah, he had them. In fact, you know, some of the stories early in his presidency of how he mishandled classified documents never got the kind of attention that it should have. But to have Pence come and say, well, mistakes were made, kind of passing it down the road. I found that interesting. Now, do I blame Pence for having that? No, I think he's probably right. It probably got swept up in a bunch of stuff that was in his office. Some poor schlub had to do his moving. You do understand these people don't actually move themselves, right? There are crews that come in and pack everything up. Well, like when we moved a long time ago, I worked for a company that moved us. And they came and literally packed everything up. In fact, my wife made coffee for the movers. They packed the coffee pot with the coffee still in it, so that when they unpacked it, yeah, the coffee was still in it. And good on them. It wasn't spilled all over the place. I was quite amazed. But we didn't pack it up. They did. And this is where the difference for me is. You know, Pence, Biden, whoever has these documents, it's not like they took them. Trump has admitted that he took them because they were pretty. They were just pretty folders. Now, never mind that there was stuff inside them. Just wanted for the folders. Even though, again, the justification is, I, with my magic hands, declassified everything. Magic hands. You know, to go with the magic hair. Yeah, so that's my thought. And good on Mike. Now, we do need to come up with a system where, I don't know, maybe classified documents aren't just lying around people's offices. Maybe in the day and age of technology, and this is where Ruben Gallego, the guy who's going to be running for Senate against Kyrsten Sinema, has said, you know, I don't have any classified documents. I don't have any paper documents. I'm a millennial. I do everything digitally. Maybe that's how we go. But then again, you know, this brings up Hillary's emails. And there you go back down into the rabbit hole. Some good news for Rona McDaniel. She will be the RNC head, winning her fourth term as the chair. And the RNC wasted no time to condemn Kanye West and Nick Fuentes for their anti-Semitic comments. Didn't say anything about Trump, though, which I found interesting. You know, found a little interesting. The guy who hosted the dinner party of the anti-Semitic group got nothing. Okay, I get it. Is what it is. I was hoping for Mike Lindell. I was hoping for the pillow guy. You know that. I was pulling for the pillow guy. He didn't do well. Sad. But here's the thing. You know, this is a shot against DeSantis. DeSantis lost round one against Trump because DeSantis's pick, well, did not even come close. And I'm not surprised. McDaniel won, what was it, 111-51 in the first ballot. She didn't have to do the Kevin McCarthy thing where he had 100 ballots to win. So I'm going to be stuck with her for two more years. And look, I'm fine. I'm fine with her. I think she's bad at her job, and I hope she loses more elections. So there is that. Finally, I want to get to in Florida. And I don't know what it is about. I don't know what it is about conservative men. I'm not quite sure. Although we did see in South Dakota, you've got the legislator there. What was it? Rocky something or other. Arrested with the child porn on his computer. Yeah, amazing. Conservatives. It's just remarkable. But Florida now has a dress code that targets women. Particularly their shoulders. Evidently, in Florida. In Florida. Now, the Florida, place where bikinis everywhere. Evidently, in the capital, in no shoulders. Got to cover those shoulders because distracted, I guess. evidently, women are never to show their shoulders when House members are present in the building, whether in the chambers or not. Now, this is one of those things where you go, is this just for the legislators? Is this for lobbyists? Is this for people coming in? Evidently, throughout the Capitol, they have posted these flyers that are saying, you know, what proper attire is and what it isn't. Now, look, I get it. You come in with a party dress, and yeah, you know, that's clearly not proper attire. But I find it interesting that maybe this is the gender war, because men are ticked that they can't wear shorts and Hawaiian shirts on the floor. And who knows? Maybe they do. I know here in Pennsylvania, where I live, everyone's flipped out that they think, you know, John Fetterman's going to wear a hoodie on the Senate floor. He's not. But I'm a hoodie guy myself. I probably would wear it on the Senate floor just because that's how it is. But the reality is this important? No, it's not important. But other states have done this too. And it's this kind of another one of those things that you go, it's control. It's one of those kind of scary moments of, is it that men can't control themselves or they want to control women? I don't know. But it just seems kind of interesting to me that these things keep popping up when there are so many other problems. So many other problems that this distracts us from the fact that they're not doing their jobs. Now, understand. Now, please understand. This is what they're meant to do. They do this for a particular reason. And that reason is to prove to you their point that government doesn't work. So you elect them to run your government and they destroy it.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News special report released to the public the video of Tyre Nichols' beating during a traffic stop by Memphis police earlier this month. It's graphic with him being punched and kicked.
You don't do that, okay?
Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
I'm on the ground.
The 29-year-old died in a hospital a few days later, and the officers have been charged in his death. Protests in Memphis right now.
People are literally violently murdered in the city of Memphis. And the city answers back by adding more police officers. Not this time.
Several dozen protesters blocked a heavily traveled bridge on I-55 connecting Arkansas and Tennessee, but as CBS's Skylar Henry reports...
Nothing violent, everyone hoping that everything remains peaceful. In fact, Tyre Nichols' mother asked for that, as well as other officials as well. But when these incidents happen, you know, it remains to be seen exactly what happens next.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier. Here's what you need to know. Republicans in the U.S. Senate want spending cuts before they'll raise the debt ceiling. Senator Ron Johnson says they'll look at everything this year, including Social Security and Medicare. Johnson proposed these earned benefits be changed to discretionary spending rather than mandatory. Democrats calling out the GOP for trying to back out of their commitment to seniors and working Americans who've earned the benefits by paying into the system all of their working lives. A little positive news for Wisconsin's farmers. WPR reporting that after years of leading the nation and the number of farm bankruptcies, new federal data shows Wisconsin had 10 Chapter 12 bankruptcy cases filed before the end of September last year, down 72% from the same time in 2021 when there were 36 new cases. One possible reason for the decline, farmers got more money from the federal government for pandemic-related programs, but those programs are now ending. I'm Jane Matnair for Civic Media News.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I grew up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at WeSaySaveIt.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Jean of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Are saying, now there's an enticing new source of labor activism for unions that are organizing at Starbucks, Amazon, McDonald's, etc. Why not a Wall Street banker union? Solidarity forever, brothers and sisters.
Well, Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel, you may remember we sat down with her during the Working Class Heroes radio tour. I really like her, but she tweeted out today that Michigan is now a reproductive rights sanctuary for much of the Midwest. She writes, where we offer full protections for abortion, birth control, the management and care of miscarriages, and fertility treatment. Now, this is, again, this is an important statement because you're surrounded there by Indiana, a state that, well, Ohio, close by. Well, what's interesting is what we're seeing coming out of states like that, the potential of chasing women down to other states and how dare you go to Michigan. This is a problem. Here to share some thoughts on where we are, especially in the rearview mirror of the 50th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, I've asked Maggie Jo Buchanan to come talk with us. She's the senior director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Maggie Jo, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Good evening.
So walk me through some of this stuff. It's the 50th anniversary. This should have been a moment where we celebrated more freedoms. We should have celebrated, yes, we're moving ahead, and yet... Well, no.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, the world has dramatically changed in the months since Dobbs was decided and the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. And I think in many ways we're still understanding, we're seeing what that world means. You know, we have, you know, at least 14 states where abortion is unavailable. Estimates have it between 1 in 3 women of reproductive age are living in states where they cannot access care. We're seeing people have to flee their homes, have to flee their neighborhoods in order to get the treatments they want. We're hearing horrifying stories of people in excruciating pain who are miscarrying and who cannot get the best type of care that would normally be provided because doctors are absolutely terrified. And it's understand why they are terrified. They could get thrown in jail. At least a handful of states allow life in prison for providing care. So we're seeing these states and medicine in these states becoming paralyzed, you know, and at the same time, though, because I have to always be an optimist, we're seeing also a huge backlash of what the Supreme Court did, you know, during the elections in 2022. When it came to ballot initiatives, those who support abortion access, or at least those who support freedom and respect for others and compassion, 6 for 6 on those. And so, you know, we see states like Michigan, as you point out, really stepping up and ensuring that people are safe when they come to get care, that care is available. So, you know, we got to focus on that because it's clear that the vast majority of the American public do not agree that this should be the state of affairs.
You know, it's interesting to me that the very states that attack workers through their No Rights at Work bills and all the anti-worker stuff, also anti-woman. And this is where I reach out to my male friends and go, look, all of these things are intertwined. This is as much a worker's bill as it is a woman's bill. And this is something that people, look, I'm an old white guy. Abortion, not my issue. But it's important as a worker's issue, and it's also important as a parent. I've got 2 daughters. I want them to be safe. I may not want them to have abortions, but I want them to be safe if that's what they choose. And yet we've got a political party, a movement in this country that wants to make my kids less safe and have less rights than their mother had.
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's about control, right? And it's taking away opportunity. It's taking away the ability of people to chart their own futures. You know, it has been well documented that after Roe was overturned, women's labor force participation, educational attainment all grew at a rapid clip. These are good things. And when we see bans put in place, when we see politicians trying to force motherhood to endanger the health of women, that's all a reaction against that opportunity. And I think people know that in their gut, that is just not the direction we want this country going in.
Yeah, no, and again, as I've been saying for years, and again, these aren't my issues. I'm just a guy on the outside looking in going, I want my daughters to have every opportunity, as you pointed out, at careers or motherhood, if that's what they choose. Mm-hmm. But I want them to be able to make those choices. But I look at this as it was always about power and control in my view. And I've said, you know, once they get rid of Roe, Griswold's next. And, you know, for me, because if you're against abortion, then the common sense place is let's push for birth control. Let's make sure that people have access to protect themselves so that they don't get pregnant to begin with. Because if you don't want more abortions, maybe preventing them is the start. And yet the same people who want to overturn Roe are the same ones who are saying, no, we can't have birth control in our health care plans, which is just nuts to me.
Absolutely. I mean, well, because it's not anything about, quote unquote, life. It is about dismantling opportunity and trying to direct other people's own choices. You know, there's a myth out there that, or, you know, a willful disbelief that those who choose abortion are irresponsible teenagers, or who don't think it through, who can't be trusted. But we know the majority of those who choose abortion care are actually already mothers. They know the extreme responsibility that comes from parenthood, and they're making the decisions to structure their lives and their family in the way that is best for them. These are incredibly important decisions, and the only ones who should be able to make them are the people who know their circumstances best.
Now, last night on the program, we had Andrew Warren. He was a state's attorney in Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis suspended him because DeSantis believed he wasn't going to enforce a law that I don't even know they have on the books yet. But he wasn't going to enforce any abortion ban, or he wasn't going to go digging through women's trash or chasing them across borders. So he suspended them. And a judge has come forth and said, no, he didn't say any of this stuff. He was doing his job. He did his job well. I don't have the power to force you to reinstate him, but reinstate him. And DeSantis is like, that ain't happening. And this kind of dictatorial power and control to push their ideology isn't even, you know, based in law anymore, in my view. It's this kind of, well, this kind of control that should scare all of us. Because as I told my gun nut friends, you know, look in Illinois, where 70 sheriffs came out and said they're not going to enforce the assault weapons ban. The governor there could, if this holds, could replace all of them. And then what are we left with?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, you said, you know, abortion is not your issue. And I appreciate what you're saying there. But when the Supreme Court's decision to, at least at the federal level, remove abortion from becoming a constitutional issue and made it a criminal one, what that has done is empower, of course, states to criminalize care. And really, when you think about it, what do you want the local prosecutor in your community doing? Do you want them exactly rifling through trash? Do you want them interviewing neighbors and sniffing around some of the most private things you could possibly do? Like, is that really what we want in our communities? You know, do you want a prosecutor focused on, you know, even in states that say they quote unquote won't criminalize the woman, you know, the alternative is, of course, you criminalize the doctor, but you're hauling to do that. And we saw it before Roe. You have to haul in potential patients to interrogate them. You have to create this fear, this incredibly complicated story of how you actually enforce these bans, which is unfortunately what we're seeing now at the state level, in the state legislature sessions, figuring out how they actually enforce this. It's horrible. And I think we all just have to ask ourselves, like, what do we really want that to be our community? Do we really want public officials to be spending their resources on that? No, I don't think so. You know, I think, you know, when we talk about what it means to enforce an abortion ban, you've alluded to this. What does it mean? It means tracking people as they go across state lines. It means poking around doctors' offices, trying to scare doctors into handing over medically sensitive information. It gets us to a very, very, very dangerous place that, again, I think that's why we're seeing the backlash. It's because this is not, even for people who, you know, may not agree.
Yeah, it's one of these things. It's one of these things. You froze for a second. It's one of these things that is frightening to me, because this is how it starts. If they're tracking your movements, if you're using an app to track your cycle, and someone's looking over that to make sure that you're still there, this is frightening kind of stuff. Especially when you're talking about now, you know, prosecutors and corporations working hand in hand. This is a scary world. And again, this isn't my issue, but it's the beginning of what. Who knows what's next? How far do they go? And I know this is the slippery slope argument, but again, it kind of is.
Mm-hmm. No, it absolutely is. And I mean, and, you know, you saw in filings on the Dobbs case, you know, people were saying one of the main supporters of the ban that we initially saw in Texas, right, before Roe was even overturned, that the Supreme Court allowed to stay in place, where there was a bounty placed, you know, on any provider that neighbors or people completely unconnected to the crime could go after people, right? Like that, this is, I mean, I don't mean to use a frivolous term, but it's just, it's bananas pants. It just doesn't, it's not the way we want our.
No, it's reality TV. I mean, it's sadly, when Texas came out with this bounty hunter idea, I go, can you just see it now? Dog to bounty hunter, you know, digging through your teenage daughter's trash. Can you imagine this happening? Because this is where they want us to go. And tracking people across lines. Are we going to start chipping women at birth to make sure that they don't cross state lines? This is nuts. I mean, the Papers, Please people are going to the next. It's not just about immigration anymore. Your daughters are next.
Yep. And it's certainly this. And it's, you know, the supporters of the abortion ban also support dismantling same-sex marriage. They are completely, completely focused and obsessed with figuring out how they control other people's lives and distorting the legal system in order to do it, which puts just everyone in danger.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, we've seen some of these laws, you know, spring up in certain red states where they're going to potentially go after people across state lines. Do you fear, as I do, the Supreme Court, the six dictators in robes, that something like this could actually pass? Because you ask the average citizen if this would be legal. That a state could track you across lines if you got medical care in another state. And universally, I every person I've asked has said, no, that could never happen. I don't know. I think it could.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, there are a lot of people, I felt, unfortunately, I felt strongly that Roe was going to be overturned when we knew the Supreme Court accepted the Dobbs case. And a lot of people say, well, that can't happen. And it's understandable why people say that can't happen, because it doesn't seem like it should, right? Like, it just doesn't, it's just not the way the world should operate. But, you know, I mean, we're seeing litigation even now trying to, you know, dismantle the FDA's power to even just set drug regulation standards just for all medicines, because these people are such zealots that because the FDA has approved what's commonly referred to as medication abortion, which is which makes up the majority of care in America, and is approved by the FDA up to 10 weeks of pregnancy, they're so angry that this medication has been approved. It's been approved for decades, and it's very, very safe. They're so mad about that. They want to dismantle just the FDA's power to set standards overall. That's not how communities stay safe. It's not how this country can operate.
I'm right there with you. So, you know, in looking at this, Maggie Jo, because I know a lot of people, again, this is not my issue, but I'm engaged in it because, as I said, I've got daughters. I want them to be safe. Even if they never have to engage in this whatsoever, I want them to be safe. And I know a lot of people like me who feel the same way and don't think the government should be involved in this. Don't want someone like Ron DeSantis or you know, the guy down in Texas or any of these zealots having any control over what our daughters do. What should we be doing, and how should we be going about it?
Well, I think speaking out, you know, sometimes abortion, I think it's less so now that Roe has been overturned. People didn't share their views on abortion. It's, you know, no one wanted to offend at the dinner table or at the party. And I'm not telling everyone what their cocktail party chatter should be, but I think one is the most important. It's most important to be in dialogue with one another. Cause one thing we see, even among people, when we do polling, even among people who, again, may not personally support abortion care, they have compassion and want to help those they love. And that's where we need to come from this decision when we talk about this issue. So that's incredibly important. You know, it's speaking out to representatives, you know, of, you know, lifting up both the bad as well as the good. Cause there is, while it's, I'm not going to I'm not going to be Pollyanna. It's pretty bleak in a lot of areas of the country. There are also movements stepping up. There are networks being set up of people just trying to help their neighbors who need care. There are governments like Michigan, like New York, who are taking steps to protect the privacy of anyone who can make it to get care there. You know, those are the human stories. That's the what I really feel is the most important human part of this that resonates with people of varying ideological stripes. That's the most important thing we have to do. Yeah.
We should have to have an underground railroad in the 21st century. Sorry, I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
No, but again, this is one of those moments where, you know, you come back to what seems to be the goal of just power and control. So last question I've got for you, you know, we see a lot of this legislation going on in states across the country. So how many, I mean, maybe you know, maybe you don't, how many pieces of legislation are banging around state houses across this country to take away the rights of women to care for themselves? And then on the flip side of that, just so there's a juxtaposition, how many pieces of legislation are out there to help feed children that they're going to force into the world? Because this is my problem here. If we're going to force women to have children, we should force them to be fed, to be housed, to get care, to get education, to get opportunities. So if you're going to be on the one side, you kind of got to be on the other. So I'm curious, is there a balance in those kind of legislation?
No, not at all. And while I don't have the specific number of bills that have been introduced that would actually help families, I would be willing to wager most of those aren't being sponsored by those who might co-sponsor an abortion ban. But we do know, you know, right now there was, of course, after Roe, there was the wave of states putting into place or enacting new laws to ban abortion. And really what we're seeing right now, last count, you know, and this was about a week ago, so please don't quote me, there was at least 60 bills already introduced to further restrict care. And what we're also seeing right now is this somewhat the switch from, you know, the bans, the specific bans, so though we're seeing those as well, of course, to what it means to enforce the bans that do exist. And this is what we were talking about beforehand. You know, that's we're seeing announcements like the Alabama AG who said, yeah, no, I'll go after women, which, of course, the talking point was always, you know, I won't go after the patient, the woman. And we're also seeing in states like Texas, they're going to try to censor information about reproductive care to try to lock down and control people even more. So I think, unfortunately, what we're going to be seeing in the next few months is grappling with this horrible question of these states that haven't, that want to go farther, of how their enforcement schemes will operate. And it's pretty terrifying. It's pretty cruel.
We live in very, well, like they say, may you live in interesting times. These are most certainly interesting. Mary Jo Buchanan, Maggie Jo, I appreciate you taking time for us. Senior Director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to check out more. Maggie Jo, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You as well. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with thoughts after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1850. Renowned labor leader Samuel Gompers was born to a Jewish family in London, England. His family emigrated to the United States in 1863, where Gompers learned the cigar-making trade from his father. At the age of 14, he joined and became involved in the Cigar Makers International Union, Local 144, eventually ascending to president. Gompers became a leader in the U.S. labor movement when he helped found the American Federation of Labor. He was the AFL's longest-serving president from 1886 to 1894, and again from 1895 until his death in 1924. Under his leadership, AFL membership rose from 50,000 to nearly 3 million. The AFL was primarily made up of craft unions, locals that represented specific skilled trades. Gompers promoted harmony among the different craft unions that comprised the AFL, trying to minimize jurisdictional battles. This philosophy of trade or craft unionism often put the AFL at odds with the Knights of Labor and the industrial workers of the world. Those two large labor groups advocated for a strategy of one big union, organizing unskilled workers and forming community-based unions.
Gompers promoted organizing and collective bargaining to secure shorter hours and higher wages. The first essential steps, he believed, to emancipating labor. He also believed that to be successful, working people had to engage in politics. The AFL supported labor-friendly candidates for political office. Under his leadership, the AFL and labor became an important political force. In 1955, the AFL merged with the Congress of Industrial Organizations to form the AFL-CIO. Gompers is frequently remembered for answering the question, what does labor want? We want more schoolhouses and less jails, more books and less guns, more learning and less vice, more leisure and less greed, more justice and less revenge. We want more opportunities to cultivate our better natures.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@ricksmithshow.com. So, this abortion issue is, again, as I've said it a number of times on this program, not my issue. Not central to what I want to be talking about. Not even comfortable really talking about it because this is not my issue. It's a woman's issue. This should be between her and her doctor. That, to me, it breaks down to that simple. And what we have now is you have a lot of these legislators who, one, show how ignorant they are about what the female body is and does and all of that stuff, but yet they want to define a woman. It's kind of crazy. The same people who tell us they want government out of our lives, small, less intrusive governments, are the same ones that are jamming this literally down our throats. And I do foresee there being a time where, since everything is so, all information is so easily gotten, that the tracking of people is, well, simple. And that you will have reality game shows at some point. I mean, we're becoming that kind of society. That you're going to have a reality show on TV of, the dog, the bounty hunter guy, digging through people's trash, looking for, there's evidence. I'm going to get my 10 grand from Texas. Because, well, they've got a bounty hunter law, or Indiana, or you name the crazy state. And that they're going to be tracking people. You what? You're on a flight? Where are you going? Why are you going there? And then, tracking you once you get there. HIPAA laws aside, it's really, when you stop and think about it, I'm against abortion. Well, don't have one. I'm against same-sex marriage. Well, don't do it. It's that simple. I personally, not in favor of it. Not in favor of abortion, personally. But as an old white guy, never going to have one. It's not my thing. I would hope that my wife and my daughters would not. I would hope that in the event that something, that they got pregnant, that... But that's their choice. It's their choice. Between them and their doctor. And yet we as a society keep throwing it in the middle of that. Now I hear all these voices, it's made women more promiscuous and all this stuff. This has been going on since the beginning of time. So when this issue came up, I talked to my aunt, who's obviously old, 20 years older than I am. And she reminded me that there are women in our bloodline that have died because of abortions, great grandmothers and great relatives of the past. And it wasn't because they were immature 15-year-olds. No, they had 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 kids. They couldn't have another. It would have killed them. It ultimately ended up killing them anyway. And it's one of these moments where you go, this is why I'm pro-safety. I may not be in favor of it. I may not like it, but I want you to be safe. And then how about we do this? And the reason I keep bringing up when all these states that pass these abortion bans and all of the pain that goes with it, how often are we funding programs to help feed those kids? Why not try and, instead of banning it and saying, no, we're going to make you have that child, how about we have a situation where we want you to have children? We want you to bring kids into this world. We want to make this an environment where it's possible. Or if you make a mistake that, you know what, you can get a job, you can support those kids. They're going to get health care. They're going to get good education. They're going to get fed. We're not there. So explain to me what sense it makes that we're going to force people to have children that we aren't willing to feed. How nuts? How nuts do you have to be? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.